It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright, get ready for some especially good audio today, because William and I both sound like crap.
Yeah.
William, because he was sick, and me, because I am sick.
Yeah. So,
this will be fun. We also just realized that last episode was our Halloween spooktacular.
We just realized
that. I don't think we referenced it at all.
No, I don't think we did.
There it is. So. Yeah, whatever crap I caught either on the way back from vacation or right. It's not COVID. We bought tests. We took tests. It's not COVID.
Mine's not either.
There was some suspicion because apparently this variant's a little different. According to the tests, it's not COVID. So I don't even know what that means anymore. At this point, the only interesting feature about COVID is that it is highly contagious compared to other illnesses. It's not particularly worse than other illnesses at this point. It's just much easier to catch, I guess.
Yeah.
Assuming that's still true, it's not like I keep up on all the variants, but so yeah. This would be fun. Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magic Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world. What were we talking about?
I don't remember.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 712.
That your voice just sounds like you inhaled a little helium.
Yeah, 712, which this whole time I've been thinking, oh, this is going to be our fun Halloween episode. Yeah. Because we're recording it before Halloween, like just a few days before Halloween.
Yeah, it's not Halloween yet, but we already recorded the Halloween episode because we're recording this early because of scheduling things.
Yeah.
And so we would record this the day after Halloween and then post it 6 days after that.
Oh, man, it's a mess.
But now it's super early. So, yeah, we're just... And this is before the holidays have even really kicked in. We're just a mess.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are at Peter's Donuts. So...
But like you pointed out, this year our podcast is on Halloween. We messed it up. I mean, if it wasn't Halloween on Thursday, it wouldn't be that big a deal. You know, Halloween was the next day or the weekend. But no, it is that day, and we got it wrong.
And so for that, we feel shame and beg you to forgive us.
Did I
tell you, this is going to sound like a complete non sequitur, but I don't think... There's a Welcome to Night Vale board game.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. And I haven't.
Yeah, it might just be in Kickstarter world or whatever. But yeah, there is one, which I'm like, damn, that's a good idea.
So you listened to the Night Vale podcast, right?
Not for years, but no. I did. I did through like the first 50 episodes, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, I think I might have heard one episode once. Podcasts are hard for me to... I have a hard time ever even listening to ours anymore, but it was very popular, and I know you liked it. I don't know what kind of board game it would make, though.
A good one.
You think so? How would it
I was excited when I saw it. I haven't backed it or anything.
Oh, okay.
I haven't backed nothing for nothing. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. And
won't you?
We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Give me a second.
Yeah, you had to summon all that energy.
People write in there sometimes on occasion with whatever the crap they want. Notes, comments, questions, topics, whatever. The hat magically transmogrifies. No, it doesn't. It just forwards it to us. And we read them and talk about them. But we don't got none. So that's okay, though, because I've got 8,000 movies that I've watched.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Did anything happen in the last, like, 3 days for you?
Well, by the time people watch this,
hasn't been a great weekend for us here. So
yeah, by the time people see this, you know, we will have had Halloween, the kids would have been over, we would have had trick-or-treating with the little kids and stuff, and a week would have gone by besides. But for us, you know, autumn is a, as I always say, is a big time of year for us. But for us, it starts with the fair, and then we go through in September, we kind of celebrate the equinox when we celebrate my sister's birthday. She turned 50. That was fun. And we've been outside in the fall leaves, beautiful colors this year. And I would say, even as I'm sitting here now, for us, it's the 28th of October. It's been a wonderful fall season and we've had a fantastic time. We went, as the people already know, we went to a pumpkin patch, a different one this year.
Did you and I talk about that offline? I can't remember.
We might have. Well, we went to a pump patch. A different.
We talked for a while after the last podcast. So yeah. I can't remember what it was.
And we did that. We've got pumpkins upstairs that, as I'm talking, aren't carved, but they will, they will have been carved and tossed off the back of our deck in a post Halloween ceremony of tossing our pumpkins off the
back. You don't take an autumnal drive to get the piece of your soul back?
No, I mean, unless we get it back when we smash them on the ground out by the house. I don't
Did you
know.
Ever watch that Joe Parra episode?
Yeah, yeah. No, we don't do that. But it's been a wonderful fall. And, you know, for us, winter season kind of starts the beginning of November, and we're very excited about that. We won't switch our, as I might have said, we always switch our seasonal decorations a month after the season starts, because that's how Iowa weather works. But we'll do that after Thanksgiving. So we're looking forward to, you know, November, Thanksgiving time, Christmas. It'll be a little hard because this is obviously the first holiday season after Dad passed. So, you know, I get a lot of texts from my family about that. And that's been hard, but, you know, otherwise it's been really nice and we've really enjoyed it. And I'm sure when this post, that's probably what I'm going to be thinking about on that Thursday, is how nice of a fall it was and how much we're looking forward to Thanksgiving and Christmas and all of that. And, you know, hoping that the business that I'm, you know, the psychotherapy is, like, I'm not just a psychotherapist, I'm also kind of an entrepreneur. So hoping that's going well by before the end of the year and we start the new year on a strong footing.
A psychopreneur.
Yeah. I love my office. I love working there. I love going there every day and seeing clients or just being there and, you know, doing research and stuff. It's just, it's great to, I don't know. I can't really describe how it feels to, it's almost like I've dreamed about something like this my whole life and here I am. But anything could happen, you know.
Your office could get hit by a bus.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not starting a fresh new business because I'm sort of partners with other people, but, you know, things can not work out or whatever. So, you know, you get a little nervous about that, but it's also exciting. So I'm hoping that as the winter season starts, and I think about how eventually, you know, just a few weeks away, a couple months away is the new year. And you're hoping that you start it with, like, okay, you know, I'm not in school anymore. I've got a license. I've got an office. Everything's going okay. There's no reason to think that 2025 won't be a perfectly successful year for me as a psychotherapist and as a business person. And that feels good to, you know, to look forward to 2025 and all the things that it could, all the amazing possibilities that it has in store for me and my family. So I'm pretty excited about it, really.
But you have any merch you want to plug?
Well, funny you should say that, because my wife's been working on like what my business cards and stuff will look like. And also my office has a window next to the door that I can put, like, you know, I could have someone come in and screen print it or whatever, or I could get, like, you know, things you can stick on the window or whatever. Anyway, I can put up a sign basically in that window. And so, you know, she's been working on like, you know, logo designs and stuff for my business cards, for that sign, and for like, if I want a coffee mug or if I want a windbreaker with that on it. So
can I offer you a suggestion for the window?
Okay. I mean, you can. You can do whatever you want.
If you had therapy here, you'd be sane by now.
That's pretty good. Did you just come up with that just right off the top of your head just now?
I mean, it is a variation on a classic theme.
Yeah. So anyway, because she's been working on that, you know, there have been thoughts about, oh, I could put this on a mug or whatever. And the colors are maroon and white, just like Melcher Dallas High School. But here's the thing. The people that I'm partnering with, Okerberg and Associates, they had maroon and white colors. And they have a connection to Melcher Dallas too. And I remember, one of them came over here to work at the office, and she was wearing her maroon and white stuff with Okerberg and Associates on it. And I said, so maroon and white, that's our colors for the business writers. Yeah. I said, those are Melcher's colors. You remember that, don't you? Cause she went to Melcher Dallas High School or.
So it's the high school's colors. I was my hometown didn't have colors.
Well, it would be the elementary school was just, you know, Little Saints or whatever. They were also maroon and white. She didn't go to the high school. She moved before high school, but I said, you know, that's Melcher Dallas High School colors, right? She goes, oh yeah, it is. She forgot that completely. So anyway, so I know you were sort of being facetious when you asked about merch, but there might be some.
I just want like a beanie that says boundaries or something.
You know? Yeah. You know, you've said in the past.
Mouse pad that says sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Yeah.
You've said in the past that therapy is mostly about boundaries. And boy, howdy. You know, someone who's been doing it now for a little over a year with individual clients and couples too, it sure is, boy. It's a lot of that. A lot of that. I mean, I never really thought about it until you said it that way some time ago, that it was that the boundary thing was so instrumental, right? But it sure is. It sure is. And client after client after client.
There are things that are wholly self-contained, but they are very rare. And anything that has any interpersonal level to it is almost always about boundaries.
Well,
oftentimes you don't even know that that's what it's about.
No, right.
Because you don't even realize that it's tied into that.
Right. I mean, I would say foundationally, it's almost every, not almost, every single problem seems to be rooted in some kind of trust issue, either with your trust with someone else or trusting your own perceptions or your own whatever. But what is trust about, right? It's about boundaries. It's about where those boundaries are, how you treat them, how you respect them, and a big one is how you make an account when you violate it, because that's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes the source of the problem isn't that the people do have boundaries. They know what they are and all that. The problem is someone has violated a person's boundaries and doesn't seem to do, they don't do the thing they need to do to make an account of it. Like, it, human beings routinely violate one another's boundaries, but it's okay if it's like, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, you know, or whatever. There's a little thing you have to do, and then the other person's like, oh, it's okay, and then you're fine. Many times the problem is not that the boundary's not there, not that the people don't, the person whose boundaries they are don't know what they are and don't know how to defend it, but someone has violated that boundary and just, and refused to acknowledge that they've done that. It's forget about even apologizing for it. They've refused to acknowledge that they've even done that. And that causes a problem in the relationship, or if it's a couple, or if it's an individual person, they can't let go of the fact that that person just
violated. That's why I try not to meet you in person.
You know, someone violated that boundary and really tried to insist that, oh no, I didn't violate any boundary, or you're stupid for thinking a boundary's there or for putting a boundary there or whatever, which I guess
stupid. I guess
that bleeds into what people mean by gaslighting these days, right?
Stupid boundaries.
But yeah, I've been kind of surprised by how often it's that kind of thing. It's like, you know, a person just has to work out how they're going to deal with the fact that this person, sometimes a person that they trusted, you know, they didn't think would be that way or behave that way, but then they did. And now that person's never gonna say they're sorry, or you know, they just have to work out how they're gonna feel about that event on their own without the benefit of that person participating or ever coming back and saying, you know what, that was stupid of me and that was awful and I'm so sorry. You know, they're never gonna get that kind of closure or that kind of account from that person. Maybe they're dead, maybe they're just a terrible person, and they're just not gonna do that. And so they have to figure out how to move on their own. And that's hard. It's hard.
I try to never acknowledge when I violate people's. It's a power move. It's what has made me into the corporate juggernaut I am.
Yeah, I don't know. There's been a lot of eye-opening things since I started this whole thing, this journey. You know, things I've been surprised by, not so much that they happen, but that they happen with the frequency that they happen, and that they happen in a way that they're the thing that brings people into therapy. I would have thought other things was what would bring people into therapy, but no, it's this, you know.
Have you got like a wall of fame yet, where like when somebody's cured, you take a Polaroid of them and put them
I'm very thankful and gratified to say there have been several people I've worked with who did feel better and, you know, didn't need to continue coming in. I've had some people who they reached that point. I didn't hear from them in a few months, and they've given me some really nice updates about how they're doing. So,
well, that's no fair. I've been seeing you for like 20 years. I'm still no better. I take it back. This is, again, I think this plays into my grand design of trying to sue you for our friendship.
So right. Good stuff. Right. Never mind. It's probably. But I mean, you know, I've also had people that see me for one session. The session goes really well, and I never hear from them again. So, you know, you've got. I don't know what to think of this.
You're kind of a dick. So.
I'm sure I'm not gonna be the right fit for everybody. I'm not sure that even the people who I've had, who I think anyway, I've had success. I mean, you know, unless they're not telling me the truth, I think I've had success with these people. I'm not sure they always were crazy about me in the first few sessions either, but I mean, therapy's so personal.
My therapist is my favorite, and I did not like her the first few sessions.
Yeah. So, you know, it's so personal, right? You just can't, you're either going to click with someone or you're not, and you know, and are everybody in the last, you know, several years who have listened to us, I'm sure they know that I'm not for everyone.
If our podcast has been a successful therapist for you, please let us know in the
blog. I'm well aware for my entire life, ever since I was a little kid, that I rubbed some people the wrong way. I get it.
So, and that's fair. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. No hard feelings or anything. But I'm gratified to know that some people who come to me do like working with me and do and are happy with the results. So that's nice, you know.
Or your wife is secretly paying them. Who knows? You know.
And maybe I'd be fine with that.
Right. I mean, I don't get this. I'm working full time now, and somehow we're bringing in less money.
Yeah, you know, it's just a, you know, mental health is just an interesting. I mean, you know, it's a real thing to observe, to empirically study, measure, test, all that. But at the end of the day, it's just you and another person in a room, and there's got all the things that make any relationship work have to still be there. You know, all the science and all the technique and all the best practices and all that in the world isn't going to mean anything if, you know, the two people can't connect on a human level, or if the client, for example, and this is pretty common, if the client, like in my case, an older, you know, man, and it's a young woman who wants to talk about being sexually assaulted. I mean, everyone could understand why maybe that's not going to happen. You know, that's not going to work out. And that's just an obvious example. But if you really think about it, there's probably lots of examples like that where you're going to want someone who.
Maybe some that are more appropriate for ostensibly a comedy podcast.
Well, I mean, it's like you could understand a person wanting someone from their religious background or their cultural background or their, you know, whatever. You can totally understand that. I understand it for sure. So there's, but there's not very many other things like that. Like, like medical doctors face that less probably. Not they probably face it a little bit, but probably a lot less than mental health people do. And then, you know, auto mechanics probably don't ever have to deal with that, or any other kind of person that's sort of using applied science in their trade. So, yeah, it's just a strange thing that way, but it's perfectly understandable. And it's hard because, I mean, I think that being an older person entering the field, it's going to, I'm probably going to have a smaller client pool than younger people, I think. I don't know if that's true, but I suspect it's true. I don't know. Okay, sorry. Why don't we talk about all the things you want to talk about? But you seem like it's going to be a huge effort for you, though. So I'm a little worried about you. Are you still with us?
I'm going to let the fan.
Oh, man.
I have seen now the first 7 Friday the 13th movies.
You have not. The first 7? Wow.
Yeah, the How? Next one will be when Jason decides to take Manhattan.
Oh, no. Oh, man. I honestly, if you didn't have some kind of bug, I think that's the reason why you feel so terrible, because you watched all those movies.
they're real bad.
Why are you subjecting yourself to that?
Because this is a staple. I wanted to check it out. And some of them aren't as bad as others of them. I find it interesting. They are not the worst slashers I have seen. They're definitely not the best slashers I've seen. Mm. They might be the most slasher I have seen. Like,
you mean like the most Friday slashery? 13th
did not invent the slasher genre. But it was there pretty early, and I think it codified a lot of things. Like, a lot of the stereotypes and tropes and cliches, I think, came out of this series. When you imagine all the things that slasher movies have, I think a lot of those things first happened in the Friday the 13th movies. And I find that interesting. But yeah, they're pretty bad. And what's interesting is because I already knew them all, because I've watched Jordan Breeding did a whole thing on all of them. And so I knew basically all the plots and everything. What's interesting is if you had had me write down how much I think I'm going to like them all, like this one will probably be really bad. This one might not be too bad. It didn't come out the way I thought. Some ones that I really expected to be comparatively good were just garbage, and some of them were that I thought would be really bad were actually weirdly, and it mostly comes down to how much did I get bored and like look at my phone and shit, and some of them I didn't, which was shocking to me, and others that I expected not to I did. Also Corey Feldman was a very good actor in his youth.
So these are Jason movies, right?
Yeah, well, yes. And Jason Voorhees is the primary antagonist of the Friday the 13th.
Oh, what's his deal? Is he like a ghost, or is he, what is he?
It's not that simple, but I'll walk you through it.
Okay, walk me through it.
So Jason's is just a kid whose mom works at a summer camp. And while at the summer camp, some camp counselors were fucking, and while they were fucking, he drowned because nobody was paying attention to him.
Oh.
This is before the movies ever start.
Oh.
So then, the year after that, some people got killed at the camp, and then other things happened, but the camp closes down. Our first movie starts where the son of the people who used to run the camp decides he's going to reopen it, and everybody's getting murderized. And everybody's like, oh shit, it's Jason. He's back from the dead to kill everybody in revenge. But it's not Jason. It's his mom who's pissed off at everybody for letting her son drown. And so she murderizes all of them, partially in revenge and partially because she's nuts and she sees like every person as the counselors that let him die, even though she already killed them the next year or whatever. So that's the first movie. It's kind of a cool twist.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yes. That's the last you'll hear. So in the second movie, more people, this is a funny thing. Very few of the movies actually involve summer camp. They frequently involve an excuse for grown-ups to be there, like camp counselor training or prepping the camp or whatever, because there's a lot of gratuitous sex and nudity in a lot of them. And that's weird when you've got little kids around.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of avoid it in a lot of ways. And in fact, the one that really does have a lot of kids is like the one Friday the 13th that has no nudity in it whatsoever. But anyway, so that's the first movie. Kind of interesting. Also features Kevin Bacon, who at that point was not very well known. In the second movie, there's more future camp counselors there, and they're all getting myrtleized. And what it turns out, I believe, see, at a certain point in the series, they're just like, we're not sure. Kind of like Mad Max. They're just like, you know, some stuff. But at this point, what we're determining is that Jason didn't drown, didn't go back to his mom, and just lived in the woods on his own for 20 years, and then happened to be like lurking in the bushes when he saw the final girl from the first movie kill his mom, and now he's mad. So in the second one, it's actual Jason, and Jason's Jasoning everybody. In fact, the one survivor from the last one, he goes to visit her and myrtleizes her and whatever. Third movie, it's still Jason. He's still myrtleizing. Fourth movie, it's still Jason. He's still myrtleizing. But at the end of the fourth movie, 9-year-old Corey Feldman kills him.
Oh.
Because 9-year-old Corey Feldman, who is a really good at making monster masks and stuff, basically makes himself up to look like Jason kind of looked when he was a little kid. And this stuns Jason long enough for Corey Feldman's sister to smack him. And then eventually Corey Feldman stabs him. And you get this very strong sense that, like, Corey Feldman is fucked up now. He's the new Jason. Like, he's going to be the new Jason.
Oh.
But that's not what happened.
Oh. Now that was starting to get interesting.
and it was called The Final Chapter. So it was the end.
Yeah.
But they still wanted to make money. So the fifth one was called The New Beginning.
And Corey Feldman was not Jason?
No, but Corey Feldman's character grew up to be a different dude who has been in a mental institution forever and ever and ever.
Okay.
And he ends up being in this sort of halfway house thing, and then people start getting myrtleized. And it looks like Jason. You see Jason, except it turns out it's not Jason. In the beginning of the fifth movie, somebody gets killed by a mental patient. And it turns out one of the EMTs was the father of the kid who got murdered.
Mm.
And he lost his shit. And so he put on a Jason thing and goes and myrtleizes everybody. And then he dies at the end of that. So we're like, it wasn't even a Jason. But now we're spooked again because Tommy's still having visions and shit. So Tommy might become the new Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently was the plan. But the movie did so poorly that they're like, fuck, we got to bring actual Jason back. So in the sixth movie, it is confusing because supposedly in the fifth movie, he was cremated. He's dead and he's cremated. But in the sixth movie, he's dead and he's buried. And Corey Feldman, all grown up, recast for the second time, goes to the graveyard and digs up Jason's body to make sure he's dead. And he absolutely is dead. But he's going to, like, burn him and shit. So what he does first is he grabs an errant iron spike from the fence of the thing and stabs Jason with it. It's Jason's dead corpse. And then goes to get gasoline or whatever, and lightning strikes the iron rod that's stuck in him, and this brings Jason back to life.
Oh no.
Just poof. And he goes myrtleizing everybody. And this one ends with Corey Feldman's character, who's not been played by Corey Feldman for quite a while, chaining up Jason and dropping him into the lake, where he's not dead. Like, he's dead, except at the very end of the sixth one, his eyes open underwater, and you see that he's there. And he's just hanging out there, dead, whatever. Then it gets weird. So, in the seventh movie, supposedly they tried to make it Carrie from the movie Carrie versus Jason.
Oh.
But they couldn't get the rights. So it's almost that. So what it is this young girl is mad at her dad for beating her mom. And she uses her latent psychic powers to collapse the lake dock that her dad was on, and her dad drowns. And then 10 years later or whatever, they go back to the lake with a therapist trying to help her process that her psychic powers killed her dad. And early on in this, she thinks she senses her dad in the lake, and she tries to bring him back up, but it's actually something she brought up.
Now, is this lake the same lake that is
it's Crystal Lake. And yeah, what's weird is Camp Crystal Lake, called Camp Blood, once people started dying a whole bunch. And then by the sixth movie, we don't call it Crystal Lake anymore because we don't like that. We call it Forest Green. But then by the seventh movie, it's just Camp Crystal Lake again. So, whatever. So the seventh movie, she accidentally brings him back up. But it's fine, because by the end, after he's murdered almost everybody in the movie, she uses her psychic powers to bring up the corpse of her dead father to grab Jason and pull him back down into the lake. End of seventh movie.
So Jason doesn't even do anything in that movie?
Oh, no, he murders everybody.
Oh.
But then at the climax, we bring up dead dad to pull him back down.
Okay.
Jason's back in the lake.
All right, so up until the point where Jason was resurrected by a lightning bolt into the
Yes, yes.
It was actually a little interesting what they were doing, kind of.
Yes, yes.
I kind of thought that was interesting, but then...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now it's just silly.
Wait for it. Oh, it's going to get so much worse. So, Jason's in the bottom of the lake again. Eighth movie, literally like a thing hanging off a boat accidentally grabs an underground power line and it crosses over Jason and the electricity brings him back to life again. In which he gets on a boat and kills some people, and then he gets on a different boat. And this boat, as part of a high school graduation trip or whatever, is going from the lake, remember, lake, to New York City.
Oh, wait. Where's the lake supposed to be? Where's the fictional lake supposed to be?
I don't know, but I do know that it's surrounded by land, because that's how lakes be.
Well, yeah, no, yeah. I know, but is it at least in New York? Lake Crystal Lake?
I have no, I don't, I probably could find out, but would it make a difference at this point? So
no,
anyway,
it wouldn't. It's just, yeah, okay.
Most of that movie, despite being called Jason Takes Manhattan, is Jason on a boat killing people. And then like the last 20 minutes, he gets to Manhattan and he fucks some things up. And then at the end of that one, some toxic waste that they're flushing out of the sewer, he gets caught in it, and at the end he turns into a little boy again, and that's the end of that movie.
He's a little boy again at the end of,
but like unconscious or a dead little boy, I don't know, you just see him like and then that's the end. So in the ninth movie, the FBI gets involved because they're like, this Jason thing is a problem.
Oh, come on now. That's got to be the title of the podcast. This Jason thing is a problem. Oh, man.
And so that movie opens with a young, attractive woman going to the camp and taking a shower and basically honeypot trapping Jason. But it turns out it's a trick and it's an ambush, and she's an FBI agent, and she at the last second somersaults out of the way and the floodlights come on and all these FBI agents come out of nowhere and shoot the shit out of him, and he explodes. Then his heart is there and his heart is beating, but then it stops beating and he's dead.
Okay.
Now, for some reason, at this point, apparently he's famous because it becomes a huge deal that he's dead now. And like, people return to the lake to the first time in years because now he's dead and they can. And like, it's on the news, and there's like a local burger joint that has a special on Jason Voorhees burgers and stuff, because to celebrate that he's dead. Mm. When and how this happened, I don't know. But in this one, we determined that Jason apparently, again, apropos of nothing earlier, I haven't left anything out that would make sense in this, swaps bodies all the time. And that's how he keeps coming back, even though that's absolutely not how he keeps coming back. And so in this movie, being momentarily possessed, the coroner ends up eating Jason's heart and lights fly into him, and he's Jason, except he's still the coroner, but he's evil. And then there's a lot of just body hopping into different ones. But apparently, the real crux of it, and one bounty hunter guy knows all this. We don't know how he learned this or whatever, but he just shows up in the movie for this. The crux of it is Jason can't stay in a body for very long because it like rots and shit. But if he can find one of his descendants and take over that body, he will become back full super Jason. And it turns out he has descendants, because like on his father's side, his mom only had the one, but apparently on his father's side. And so that becomes a thing. But also, Jason's descendants are the only ones who can kill him permanently. And so in that movie, he ends up taking over a body and getting fully Jasoned again, but then a different descendant stabs him with a magical dagger and he's gone to hell. That's the big thing. And in fact, there's a big thing at the end where the hockey mask is sitting. The hockey mask came around in the third movie, by the way. He didn't have the hockey mask before then.
Well, how did the mom disguise herself in the first movie?
She didn't. We just don't see her.
Oh.
And she just is myrtleizing people. And the second one, he's got like a bag on his head or whatever. In the third one, somebody brought a hockey mask and he puts it on. And then people liked that well enough. That became his thing. So then the end of the ninth one, we see the hockey mask sitting there. And we see out of the ground, Freddy Krueger's clawed hand grab the mask and pull it down.
Mm.
And this was the thing so that we could do a crossover between Freddy and Jason, which we did, but doesn't really factor into the timeline. Anyway, 10th movie, Jason's body is kept in cryogenic suspension in a secret laboratory so the government can study him. But then hijinks ensue and he gets out, and at the last second we freeze him again, and he is frozen for 450 years. After the Earth is no longer habitable and humanity has left, and coming to salvage stuff on Earth, they find a Jason. And yes, the 10th movie is Jason in space.
10th movie is Jason in space. Okay.
Yes. And then that's it. We did a reboot that didn't do real well. And like I said, we did a crossover with Freddy, but that's all the Jason we've had so far.
When was the reboot?
2009, I think.
Oh. Didn't, what did it do? Start over? Like, what did it?
It was a reboot that was sort of combining the first two movies together.
Oh.
In a way. And I've seen people try and like fit it into the timeline, but yeah, it's its own thing. And it did not do very well at all.
So the movie where he was brought back to life by the lightning or whatever. Then it just becomes a Revenant story, really.
Kind of, but they kind of changes the story of time. They do this in all of them. They do this in the Leprechaun movies. They do this in the Friday the 13th movies. The explanation for what the fuck is going on with Freddy Krueger and how you deal with him changes every movie. Same. It's nuts. All right. Definitely didn't want to talk about Friday the 13th that long because it's terrible. All right. I'm going to talk about some. We saw a lot of other movies. While we were on vacation, we saw Time Cop. None of us had seen Time Cop before. It's fine.
I've seen that, but I don't remember it.
Me neither, really. It's fine. I mean, it was, I will say, it is definitely in the top range of time travel mechanics of any movie I've seen, which is a very low bar.
Right.
It doesn't have good time travel mechanics. It just has better than most of the movies I've seen.
Right.
We watched Bodies, 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 which was a horror movie. It's teens and people getting killed. It's kind of fun. It's got some twists, but it's not that exciting. We watched the new Salem's Lot on Max.
We watched that. Okay. Abby's wanted me to watch the old one forever, and I'm not interested. I want to watch it. But we watched the new one. Then she insisted on watching the old one, so we watched the old one too. Neither one of them are any good as far as I'm concerned. I'm kind of interested in reading the book, actually, because I think I might actually like it. And I've never read any Stephen King.
Yeah. Me neither. I keep thinking, like, I want to find a Stephen King book to read because everybody talks about it all the time.
I think if I read one, it'll be that one. Yeah,
I think
maybe,
you have to be a certain age to be really
interested. Maybe. But if I try one, it'll be that one.
I genuinely saw this movie, what would it be, like 2 weeks ago now or so? Can't remember a damn thing about it.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember a damn thing about it 5 minutes after it was out. Like, it was the most nothing burger of a movie.
What I realized after watching both versions, though, and trying to figure out what might have been in the book, I realized that... Midnight Mass is Flanagan's shot at that kind of story.
Yeah.
And
way better.
Way better. Right. Way better.
It's just so nothing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's
not good.
I finally got Trish to watch The Mummy, the 99 Brendan Fraser one.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's good. Well, okay. It is more racist than you remember.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And I remembered it being kind of racist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's more racist than you. Not as racist as, say, your average Indiana Jones movie, but it's still kind of racist.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, just a fun time. And it very much is just chemistry between the main characters. It's a good, fun action movie, except for the problematic portrayals and accents and things and places. But it's very much in that vein, in that it's a very pulp story from a time period where everything was like, it's a colonial thing. And so, yeah, but it's kind of a fun time. I would recommend checking it out again if you haven't in a while. We saw Long Legs.
Oh, okay.
And I'm very annoyed by this because we didn't like it. I mean, it's not bad. Again, just sort of like, you know how we feel about Nick Cage.
Right.
Love that guy. And people are talking about this as one of his best performances years. No, it wasn't. It was self-indulgent bullshit. Like, it just, I didn't care. And for all that it sort of has supernatural overtones, it's mostly just a serial killer story.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Not a very good one either.
It's not compelling. When you actually see him, he looks weird as hell. He kind of has that Robert Zadar cherubism thing going. Vaguely sort of looks like Rocky Dennis in a way. It's a weird makeup effect. And I just didn't give it. I'm very sad that I just wasn't that into it.
Yeah. And you get a sense that it could have been better. Like, with just a few changes, it actually could have been scary, creepy, interesting. But no, they didn't.
They didn't think of Nick Cage in the right time frame. If you're going to make a good movie with Nick Cage in it, there are two ways you do it. One is before you've even come up with a movie premise, you're like, I want to make a movie with Nick Cage in it. Right. And if you build it around that, it can be a fun time. It probably won't be a good quality movie, but it'll be a fun time.
Yeah.
Or once you've built your movie and you're like, who do we need for this fucked up role? Nick Cage. This one feels like in the midst of constructing what it was about, they were like, you know, it'd be fun. Let's make Nick Cage the villain. And then they built it off of that. It's the wrong time.
Wasn't he involved in the project, like a producer or something?
Probably. But I mean, it very much feels like a vanity project for him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Nick Cage may not be a good judge of Nick Cage's abilities. I'm not sure.
Or a good judge of what movies are going to be good for him. Right? Yeah,
but it just didn't. But just, I mean, it's not just him. The whole movie's just not that interesting.
Yeah.
It feels like a Wish.com version of Silence of the Lambs.
Well, but it's true. I see this many, many times where he was a producer on it. And I see when people produce movies and they put themselves in them.
Yeah.
Often it's bad casting. It's like I appreciate that you like this project, but someone needed to come to you and say, you're wrong for this part. I know you're producing it and all that, but you are totally wrong for this part. This isn't going to work. And that happens a lot where, I mean, a lot of Kevin Costner projects where he's producing and or directing and he puts himself in the movie. It's like, no, don't cast yourself because you're not right for this.
Crucially, I don't think this movie would necessarily have been supremely improved with different casting of that part. Well, I just don't think it was very interesting.
No, I mean, that's true. But you never know how a bad casting decision impacts everything else.
True.
So it's hard to say.
We saw Borderlands.
Oh, right. You told me about. You didn't say what you thought of it, but
it's impressively bad and not in a fun way.
Now, like, did you play the games? I forget.
I played half of the second game.
Okay.
So I have this much knowledge of the games. If you have any knowledge of the games, you will hate it because it is a terrible adaptation in so many ways.
Okay.
But even outside of that, it's just a bad movie. Mm. Terrible casting choices. Every line of dialogue you have heard in a different film. It is one of those movies. I mean, and this is a thing, even if you don't know the video games, this movie came up, pulled a plot out of its ass that has nothing to do with the actual story of the games in so many ways. It took bits and pieces, but it's a wholly original story that is super dumb. It's just bad. All the casting was terrible choices. And it has some actors I really like, but they shouldn't be in this movie. Every piece of dialogue you've heard in a different movie, in fact, you've heard in several different movies, it has the most generic lines and jokes and plot twists. It's super dumb, and it's just, we were high and I laughed twice, and by laughed I mean
oh yeah,
Trish a little bit more, she got like 4 giggles out of it, but that was it. I couldn't even tell you a good line from it. There were just a couple times where I was like, all right. It's shockingly bad as a movie. I don't know what else to say. It's just bad. Don't waste your time. It's not even a fun watch it because it's horrible. It's just bad. It's not even interesting with that. Hmm. Like, it just sucks. So don't watch it. All right. I got to hit a couple of big ones here. All right. So the other night we watched Elementary.
Never heard of that one.
It's on Netflix. It is also known as The Blacksmith and the Devil.
Oh.
It is a movie about a piece of folklore from Basque country, and the movie is in Basque with subtitles. Basque being a region in, I'm never sure about this, northern Spain, southern France, sort of right in the Pyrenees.
Yeah, right. Have you talked about this before? Keep talking. Maybe you've told me about
possibly,
it. I don't know.
Because that was the thing. I was like, have I seen this before? But I haven't seen this before. Mm-hmm. But I was curious about this before. Okay. I've known about this movie for a while. And I thought, maybe I've seen it, but if so, I don't remember it really well. And then when I watched it, I'm like, I definitely didn't see this whole movie. It is set in the 19th century, and again, it is based off of some folklore, and it's about a blacksmith who sells his soul to the devil, and it goes poorly, and then he traps the devil in a cage, and the little girl comes and finds him, and it's a difficult plot to explain without spoiling a lot of the plot.
Mm.
So I don't want to, but I recommend it highly. It has very strong shades of like Pan's Labyrinth. It has some very cool effects, which are almost all practical. And it is very much a fairy tale. So like not everything makes entire sense, but it works as like a fairy tale.
Right, right.
And it's Trish loved it. I liked it. I had some initial issues because again, it's one of those like a lot of shitty people in it, and so I had trouble with that. But I found it very satisfying all told, and Trish really liked it. It has some really cool effects. It even has some comedy. It takes place in this little poor town after some war that I don't know, but something involving Carlists. I don't know who it is. I'm sure it's an actual historical thing. But this town like lost everything because of the war and all this stuff, and then a government official comes in to try and mostly our POV is this little girl who's mom hanged herself before when the girl was so young she didn't know her mom. Mm. And so she's raised by the priest and some random woman and not treated very well. And all the other kids in the town bully her because they're like, your mom went to hell. And that's, hell is a very big focus in this movie. Go figure. But I would recommend it very much. It's on Netflix. It's been on Netflix for a while. It's been there 2-3 years, I think. But yeah, it's Elementary, with 2 R's, Elementary. If you start typing that into Netflix, you would. But I would recommend it. It's very cool effects. Yeah, it's just a really good old-fashioned sort of folktale, that looks really. It's very grimy and darkly, but it's very cool in that way. It's very spooky. I would not say it is particularly gory or anything like that, or particularly scary. It's a vibe. It's very spooky. But yeah, it's pretty neat. I would recommend checking that out.
Cool.
Last night, not last night, maybe the night before, recently, we watched The Exorcism.
Hmm.
I know that is the most generic name, but it is a recent film starring Russell Crowe that has not done well commercially. In part because everybody thought it was like a sequel to The Pope's Exorcist, but it is not.
Oh,
it is actually in this movie. Russell Crowe plays an actor who is playing a priest in an exorcist style movie.
Oh,
but he's like, he was a famous like action star, but then he had substance abuse issues, and so he was sort of gone for a while. And now he's doing this, but it's one of those where like, oh, maybe there's actual spookums involved.
Spookums.
It's bad. Trish got real upset. Like she went off on this movie when it was over. She was unhappy with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked it.
Oh, okay.
I think it might successfully be a so bad it's good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it is a bad movie. It's a very bad movie. In particular, the pacing and editing make zero sense. I am confident that it's a little bit of a heartbreaker for me because I cannot escape the feeling that it's just two steps to the side of being a good movie.
Oh, interesting.
But they clearly were trying very hard and they clearly failed very badly. And that to me is my definition of a so bad it's good movie.
Mm.
You think it's building the things in the first half, and then it just goes completely off the rails. David Hyde Pierce is in this movie. Adam Goldberg is in this movie. Sam Worthington is in this movie. There's a lot of names in this movie. But yeah, it doesn't make sense in a way that very much feels like there's scenes that would make it make a little more sense.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just like, well, why is this now? How did we get here? Or just like a scene that means something in theory, but we never address it again. It's just all over the place. But I thought it was kind of fun how bad it was. And everybody is trying their heart out. And the performances are very good in with what it is. But yeah, it is a train wreck in a way that I found quite fun. So you can check that out. And then one last one here we got to talk about. This one's tough to talk about. It's What's Inside.
I've heard of this one.
This is a very new movie on Netflix. That was such a dumb title that I had no interest. I'm like, what? Is it a biopic about the invention of the Pentium processor? Like, what? It's not that. I think it. I mean, Netflix thinks it's a horror movie. It barely qualifies. It's much more of sort of a sci-fi thriller, I guess.
Okay.
It is a very unique film. It is a very deliberate, carefully made film. It is, I think, a very good film.
Mm.
It was a terrible film for me.
Oh, I see.
It stressed me out.
Oh. It were your expectations part of the problem, or just
no. This is general. If you had told me what the movie was, I would have been like, I probably should not see that movie.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough.
But in nebulous ways, not like it has a rape scene or like it's in nebulous ways. It just, it preys on my anxieties in a way that I really wanted to like pull my own skin off while I was watching it.
Understood.
Don't want to spoil much. It is a, it's a body swapping movie. It's a old college friends get together for a party one night and then there's body swapping. And hijinks ensue. It is, like I said, it's incredibly deliberate in its direction and its style. It does really weird things with lighting and like what the different lights mean. And like if it's lit this way, it means this and that kind of thing. It does some really clever filmmaking. The way it handles flashbacks is fascinating in this weird sort of stop motion thing where, because you're hearing the conversation about the flashback and like as people chime in the picture changes and stuff. It's a very cool idea. The performances are amazing, especially given it's a body swapping thing. They do such a good job with that. I think it is a very good movie. It just, it's not supernatural enough, and it deals with a lot of people being really awful and not, and not they don't just all get slaughtered. Like I can handle movies where everybody's terrible and then a Boogans comes out and just murderizes them. but this didn't have, it's much more complicated in its resolution and everything. But yeah, I think in general I would recommend it. It's just not, it really hit some of my anxiety. I mean, I watched the whole thing. I didn't have a problem with that. But like, it, the rest of the night I was like buzzing. Really.
Okay.
But it's an impressive movie, and it's a very deliberate movie. The writer and director clearly made the movie they wanted to make.
Like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they worked really hard to get it just right. And for that alone, if you are a film nut, it's probably really good. Amanda the Jedi, who we watch on YouTube, did a thing on it, and we watched that right afterward. And she loved the movie. Has seen it like 3 times. She actually got tickets to it at a film festival so she could see it again, even though she'd seen it at an earlier film festival. Just because she thinks it's really good to see with other people, which I think is probably true. And if it's one of those, I've been pondering this lately, like I have trouble with this kind of stuff. And I've talked before, if it's a realistic rape scene, I have issues. If it's not, I don't. That kind of, she's watching this movie and she's like, it's a movie. Look at these awful characters doing crazy ass shit. I watch things like this and I'm like, it's a story. Look at these people doing terrible stuff.
Mm.
And I think if you are one of those people who is better at your brain is just like, it's just a movie and you don't necessarily empathize with the people on the screen or whatever,
right,
to any strong degree, you'll love it. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I'm just like, these are actually, in my head, these are real people. And so what they do and what happens to them hits me emotionally hard in a way that it hopefully won't for a lot of people. If you can just appreciate it as a movie, I think it's probably a really good movie.
Okay. Interesting.
Trish was kind of kind of liked it. But yeah, so I guess I would recommend it, even though it really wasn't good for me.
What's it called again? Yeah,
it's What's Inside.
What's
and it's just on Netflix there. It doesn't have any actors I really knew. One of them looked really familiar, and I looked him up, and I've seen him in a couple things, but I think he just looked like somebody else I knew. I don't know. It's not, but it's really good performances. And it's a very interesting movie. It's one of those that is probably really fun for repeat viewings because you catch things.
Right.
Because there's a lot. It's a very twist heavy movie. A very twist heavy movie. There's lots of different twists throughout. And a lot, and partially because there's a lot of unreliable narration
throughout. Mm, mm-hmm.
Not just in terms of what people say, but like the way it's filmed. So you think it's this, but it turns out it was this. To the degree that things that aren't even explicitly mentioned, like later we were like, oh shit, that thing was this. We didn't even realize. We just thought that was like a stylized thing, but that's actually this. And like it's. And yeah, just some real fun ways they handle the editing and the shots, and like I said, the lighting plays a huge role in it. That is very interesting.
Okay.
And now I'm fucking caught up on all the fucking movies. Thank goodness. We just finished season 3 of Hacks last night. That was my choice, so my next choice is going to be Agatha All Along. We'll start that shortly. We're finishing up season 1 of Kevin Can Fuck Himself, and then Trish will pick a new thing. We talked about Oddity on here, right?
I'm not sure what we talked about specifically, but we did talk about it.
Did you see it?
No. I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did
see that it. One. The further I get away from, I liked it at the time, but the further I get away from it, the more I like it.
Okay.
That one stuck with me in an interesting way that I can't quite explain. So if I hadn't mentioned it, I want to make sure I did. But
sure we talked about it.
I think we did, because I know at one point it was on my podcast list and it's not now. So if you'd like to direct what we talk about, and please do, I hate this self-direction. write in themagicaltalkingcat@gmail.com and tell us, ask us some questions. Tell us a movie that you saw recently that you think we should see, or a movie you saw recently that you don't, or a movie that we talked about that you think we're wrong about, or whatever, or merch ideas for William's psychopreneur business.
Entrepotherapy.
Yes. So, rewatching Arrested Development is tricky. There's a lot of bits that haven't aged too well.
Oh, are you going to talk about the therapist or thing?
Analyst therapist.
Yeah, the analyst.
But there are individual jokes that just stick to this day. And yeah, the one where he was the first analyst therapist, the world's only analrapist, and then he made the business cards and everybody freaked out, and I remember him handing one to Buster, and he's like, it's don't worry, it's not pronounced the way you think. And Buster's like, it's not the pronunciation I was worried about.
It's not the pronunciation I was worried about.
Also, fun fact, I'm playing a new video game, and one of the side characters, you know, they have like little quirky things they say at the end of a fight or whatever. The character's name is Zephyr, and at the end of a lot of fights, he says, when we succeed, his line is, it looks like everything's coming up, Zephyr. Which I'm like, it's like Milhouse. Everything's coming up, Milhouse.
Yep.
All right. But yeah, so write us, themagicaltalkingcat@gmail.com. So we can talk about other things. Please help me. Please. I'm so cold.
So cold.
Also, go to the blog, magictalkinghead.com, and give us commentary on all the stuff we said. And then we'll be back in a week for you guys. For us, it'll be so long. So forever long. But, yeah, so do all of that, and we will talk to you at the next meeting.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.